Hi, my name's Pete Banton, and I'm the co-founder of the Awaken Life Project here in Portugal. And I'd like to welcome you to this new podcast, which is named after my recently released first book called The Fire of the Heart. In this podcast, I'm going to be exploring the nature of an authentic spiritual awakening and its potential implications in these tipping point times we are living through together. I hope that you will find these podcasts illuminating and provocative, and most of all, I hope that they'll ignite a big and potentially all-consuming fire in your heart.
So very happy today to be speaking with Sol Peterson, who's in New Zealand. And I came across Sol doing some research into different men's retreats, men's groups that are happening around the world. And Sol has been working with men and also leading men's retreats for around 30 years, right? So quite a bit of experience. And is also a therapist and a teacher. So very nice to meet you.
And good to meet you too.
And maybe to dive in and get the ball rolling. As you know, our documentary that we're working on is called A New Men's Liberation. Mm. And the impetus for it is not only the inspiration we feel from the work we've been doing together as a men's collective and wanting to share that more widely, but also the sense that we're living in a time where what we could call a men's liberation of some kind, you know, really needs to occur. And, you know, we've had to some degree what we could call a women's liberation movement. But it's really a time in which so many men are confused, really, about what it means to be a man and what is an authentic expression of masculinity. Mm. And, you know, and also, as you know, we're living in a time where there's a lot of messaging about toxic masculinity and,
yep,
and a depolarization of the sexes. So maybe to get the ball rolling, why do you feel this subject is so important, and what would you say, why and what would you say are the biggest challenges for men in terms of discovering a more authentic, yeah, embodied, you know, we could say even sacred masculinity?
I think I don't really resonate very well with the men's liberation idea, because it feels like it's still kind of tripping on the women's liberation. What works, mm-hmm, for me better is the notion of men's realization of,
yeah,
themselves,
like that,
and power. Mm-hmm. So that I think it's the realized man, the mature man, and what we see largely on the planet and acting out in business and politics is really a lot of boy psychology. It is not the, you know, it's not the potency of the initiated man. It's not the kingly and magician energies, you know? So, and I could say there, I have this nice quote from Carl Jung, in which we were talking previously about the archetypal energies and why we are interested in it. Oh. And the main reason we're interested in is the potential for regeneration and transformation. Oh. And Jung says we are condemned to unconsciously act out the powerful archetypal energies and instincts that we do not consciously ritualize. Mm-hmm. So what we don't consciously ritualize, we act out. And that's warrior, it's shadow king. Mm-hmm. Creating all of that, you know, so this is all shadow play.
Yeah.
And it's vested interest from a small group has a lot to do with selling arms and making money. Mm-hmm. And it's not to do with the, you know, what we had there was the example of the kind of the magus and the king in Thich Nhat Hanh,
who right.
came forward to say, stop this, you know? Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe on that subject, because as I told you, this is one of the themes I was particularly interested to explore with you, is the is the archetypes, the masculine archetypes, you know, the king, the warrior, the magician. Yeah. And yeah, it would be interesting maybe to share a little bit about those main archetypes and what they represent. And I'm just curious how you work with them.
Yeah. With men. So for me, what I realized, the first year I did a men-only retreat was in 1988. I did a weekend. And at the end, it was an awesome weekend. It also had a sweat lodge in it. Mm-hmm. It was very powerful. But at the end of 2 days, what I realized was that the men were just getting going. And they, from my point of view, they had not arrived in, or they had just arrived in themselves where they're really ready to share at a deep level. Whereas doing groups with mixed groups with women, the women more quickly there with themselves. So what I did then was a few months later, I did a 4-day retreat. And since then I've been doing usually 4-day retreats. Sometimes I have done longer, like a 10-day, you know, meditation and Tai Chi retreat. But, and that has got to do with the kind of the timing of men and women. And men need a bit more time and to drop in. So the other part was, it was pretty easy to create a nice experience for men, but to make it valuable, I felt that we needed to be discovering something a little more than just having a nice experience.
Right.
And so I'd been very influenced by Robert Moore's book, The King, Warrior, Magician, Lover, the kind of the work of Robert Bly and a number of other men who were in the 80s, yeah. really creating kind of men's events and starting to talk about, you know, what do men need, you know? So, so looking through Moore's work, the point about the shadow is if we take something like the warrior, okay? So the warrior is in the boy, we have the way Moore models it is like a pyramid or a triangle, a triangle more than the pyramid. And so at the top in the boy psychology, you have the hero. And at the bottom, which is the shadow, one side is full of power, that's the bully, and the other side is without power, that's the coward. Mm-hmm. So at the top, you have the hero. And Moore would say that the hero is as good as it gets in boy psychology, but the hero is actually what needs to be transcended to get out of the boy, you know? So each of the the four energies, Jung was very keen on what he called the quaternio, I think. So it's these four energies of the king, the warrior, the magician, and the lover. Mm. And it's been very interesting thinking a little bit more about it before talking to you, because I realized really how little I know and how much there is to know. And to talk about the archetypal energies is really to talk about the whole collective unconscious,
right?
You know, and talk about these deep, according to Jung, that these energies are like a blueprint for a developing human or developing man. And this is where our transformation goes. It says deep, deep instincts. And at the deepest place, they're actually not male or female.
Right.
And he talks about the four couples within, you know? So in fact, within we have both a king and a queen. And this is also why we at times can be a little more uncertain about, you know, our notion of gender.
Mm.
Because we have all of this going on inside ourselves. So the key thing in the transformation from the boy to the man is the initiation process, which is designed, and all pre-modern groups, all tribes, in every area of the world, the boys were brought up to be men.
Yeah.
And to have a warrior spirit, able to kill an animal or fight against someone, but also to learn how to often, you know, take care of animals and to grow things. So this was the concept within initiation is you have three factors. You have the magician or the elder, the ritual elder. The ritual elder creates sacred space. And then with the sacred space, there's the process of initiation, which usually involves some kind of wounding, you know, in some way. Could be quite small. Let's say the sweat lodge could be used. And the sweat lodge, the heat and the pressure could be the kind of wounding, you know? Mm. So, but what is it that is being torpedoed here? What is being torpedoed in the boy and is the infantile grandiosity?
Right.
But within each of these archetypes, what you have is you have this impulse to be grandiose.
Right.
So example, there was a young boy years ago, and he cut out, loved basketball. So he'd cut out pictures of Michael Jordan's head, you know, or Michael Jordan's body and put his head on top, you know? And sort of imagining himself becoming Michael Jordan, you know, and that's fine within, you know, like, let's say if you actually do your work to try to become like Michael Jordan, but if it stays in fantasy, it's just all big and has no substance.
Yeah.
So what is being transformed in the boy is the infantile grandiosity. And that is what, that is the disaster for men who have not had their initiation, because you have the same infantile grandiosity that's in the business world. It's the same grandiosity that will put chemicals into the river because it's cheaper to do so. Or create wars somewhere because we're selling arms, and this is the, you know, the shadow magician setting this up. It's all relationship between shadow magician, shadow king.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you could say, because you mentioned the warrior, the shadow warrior, shadow magician. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe say a little bit more about the other archetypes. Like, well, there's the king you mentioned. Curious to hear a bit more about the magician, what that archetype actually represents.
Well, it is the
archetype. Oh, the lover, the other one.
Of insight. You know, the magician is the archetype of insight. It's and when it goes to the shadow, it's so the magician is the Merlin, you know, it's the Gandalf, you know, but when it goes to the shadow, the magician is the detached manipulator.
Right.
You know, it's the shadow is always with power and without power.
Right.
So without power, the magician is, oh no, I didn't do that, I have no power, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas the powerful black magician, you know, is in the power side. So the shadow is always bipolar, it's always with and without power.
Yeah.
And so the lover is the, you know, is the shadow is addiction,
right, you know,
and impotence, you know. So it's the addiction is, you know, I have to have everything, you know. I why should I deny any sensual pleasure?
You know.
So all of these are deep instincts within us that for us we need to at least meet. And this is you know, our job with this is basically to get to know ourselves, really, and to understand when it's not a question of whether or not we will be in the shadow. The question is where we're in the shadow and when. And often it is under stress.
Right. Yeah. You know, when we're under stress, it really gets revealed where we're really at.
It's automatic, yes.
It's our bottom line.
That's right. That's right. So, and that is, and that's what we do in on our retreats. We've done a lot of things that relate. So in the 4 days, I would give 1 day to each of the of these archetypal energies, 1 day to the king, 1 day to the magician, 1 day to the lover, and 1 day to the warrior. And in the first about 3 or 4 years, because I felt that the warrior was the power that, you know, that served the king into his success, the warrior was the one that controlled the lover, the warrior was the one that had the focus, you know. So I gave the first day to the warrior, and then the second day to the lover, the third day to the magician, and the fourth day to the king, because, you know, Bly would say we don't get into the gold of the king energy until at least in our 50s, and maybe we're lucky if we do then.
Right.
And maybe as men, we never get into the kingly energy, you know. This is it, unless we get into the kingly energy, which is involved in mentoring, the kind of process that you're doing now. This comes out of the mentoring and the blessing regenerative side of the kingly energy.
Yeah, it's very, just very resonated with that as you were saying it. I can, because I'm 57 now, and I've been saying to a lot to people lately, you know, the 50s is the best, you know. I feel more, you know, I feel not only happier and more full, but it's something about, yeah, this kingly energy. Yeah. And obviously I'm a mentor, and that's an aspect of it, but there is something that I'm experiencing in myself and my life. That's quite recent. It's interesting. I hadn't thought of it at all as having to do with this king archetype, but there's something resonates about that.
Yes, and that is important on the, so for each day, we've done many different things, you know, and one of the things that has been a constant is we've often taken a task, because men together quite often like doing things.
Yeah.
Right? So we've, as with my friend Kelvin, we've built bamboo flutes, we've built arrows with another friend who is an archer. We've made an earth buildings, we've done expressive art. So and then looking at how each of these energetics relates to them. And that's been quite good. Do you know the voice dialogue process?
No.
It's a kind of Hal and Sidra Stone started. It's a way of looking at the many different parts of us, many selves.
Oh yeah, I think Genpo Roshi was working with that, right? In his big mind process.
I don't really know, but what's clear is we have so many parts. So here within Moore's model, it's all of these parts. So what we do is we would do some voice dialogue work in which we would dialogue with, let's say we're working on the day of the warrior, we dialogue with the bully part, and we may find that there's no bully there, you know, but we do find a strong coward, you know, who's hiding,
right?
You know? And then taking it further. So that kind of dialogue is very interesting. It's voice dialogue is interesting because when you're doing it, it seems very easy and light. But afterwards, you go, "Oh, that was quite deep." It starts taking you somewhere strong. Yeah. And so, so that's one of the kind of ways of doing that, of working with it, trying to be conscious and asking the question is, where do I get caught? Where do I get into trouble? Because at different stages in our life, we get in trouble in another place. You know, for example, any kind of addiction relates to shadow of the lover, any kind of aggression is shadow of the warrior, any kind of tyrannical behavior, is the strong behavior of, of the shadow king, and the magicians.
Yeah, the magician, the shadow of magician.
This is a manipulation, the detached manipulator shadow, and so this is where you can do smoke and mirrors and,
Yeah, very interesting looking through this lens, because one of the ways I've worked with the men, one of the ways we've articulated the challenges of this initiation, let's call it this process of initiation, which just completely absent from our culture, is outgrowing childhood and adolescence.
Yeah.
And seems to me there's in terms of that diagram, the two shadow energies, there's a correlation there, the weakness, because I do find, this is, many men, and especially the more sensitive, spiritually interested men, often very weak, maybe very sensitive, maybe very intuitive, relatively. But when it comes to, activating, we could say that third chakra, which you could say represents power.
Yeah.
Because there's such a taboo around.
Yeah.
Being, manifesting that power for all, because, we don't want to be macho jerks, and we don't want to be, we don't want to embody the negatives that are tend to be so aware of these days. There's a lot of, there's cowardice in the face of challenge, and also falling into a kind of childlike dependency or, the boy just being, when push comes to shove, and as you said, it's under stress that we really find out where our center of gravity is. And this is definitely a big aspect of the work together. It's recognizing that this kind of creative friction and challenging each other is needed, so we really find out, well, what are we made of? Where is our center of gravity? And often what reveals itself then is this flip, either towards the childish, more weak side, or on the other side, you have the more adolescent, reactive, bully energy, And and it's quite, I think, a lot of men and this was also has been my experience, you see how you tend to flip between the two and to discover this pathway to a more authentic masculine beyond these shadows, it really demands a lot of humility. And in that humility, vulnerability, opening up to this matrix of relationship in the brotherhood, and and then finding a strength there that isn't based in these shadow energies.
Yeah, that's right. I think when in terms of the assertion and the centeredness, one of my experiences in the last 20 years particularly is young men coming through I find them reluctant to be assertive, you know, and that's really, for me, that's a concern. Yeah. Part of it is if they're also not involved in physical activities, you know, if they never actually kind of work on a farm or out in the forest or anything like that, then they don't, you know, they're not coming up against that force. Right. Another way to transform that physical energy that comes with the centeredness and the capacity to assert yourself, I think, is the martial arts.
Yeah.
And this is where this warrior energy is transformed into the Aikido master or the Tai Chi master, who the Tai Chi master, the whole thing is, okay, this person is attacking me. How can I take care of them? Mm-hmm. Because they're obviously deluded. Mm. And yes, how do I stay safe or protect another, you know? Mm. So this is, and in order to do that, you actually have to be strong and centered, mm-hmm. you know, and so you have to be capable of assertion. Mm. And I think that's important. I think that's really important.
And how do you, in terms of your work with men, and particularly on the retreats, because you mentioned this voice dialogue process, yeah. that's one way to engage this process. But also, you mentioned a sweat lodge, do you incorporate aspects that challenge men to be assertive in this authentic way, or to be, you know, to actually and you know, a kind of creative confrontation?
Well, the sweat lodge is definitely one of those, in that in order to be in the sweat lodge, you really have to show up. And there's always going to be some point when there'll be a challenge, and you need to be able to be there, and you meet it or surrender, but there's a conscious relationship to the challenge. So that's very much one of those. I use, we do sport as well. We play volleyball. The volleyball's great, and then Tai Chi and Qigong, and depending on which men are there, sometimes we've had men with a lot of experience in martial arts of different kinds, or wrestling. Mm-hmm. So we have quite a bit of physicality. So there's a real kind of physical nature to the work we do.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm curious also in terms of the dimension of brotherhood. Is it your experience, and do you find that when men come together and find that trust in each other, that there's a whole relational ground there that's incredibly empowering in terms of men, you know, going beyond this whole lone wolf kind of syndrome, you know, because as men, we're very much conditioned, we're like, I'm a man, so I should know who I am and where I'm going, I don't need any help, kind of thing, you know. And I find even a lot of men who are spiritually interested, they still go about their spiritual process very much on their own terms, you know, like, well, I'm finding my own way. It's quite a thing for men to let go of that, what I would call false lone wolf independence, and surrender into a relational matrix, especially with other men, and then begin to discover what I would call a true independence, you know, that's not based on those shadows you were speaking about earlier.
I think that, you know, you're talking about surrender, and I think there's I'll just read this little thing from Lao Tzu, which relates to this thing around humility and surrender. And I think when we come into that place together, something happens. Like for me, what happened was I realized that in being with men, I somehow had a better chance of seeing myself than in my relationship with women. And it was that was quite confronting for me, but it was Also, there was a safety in it that I realized that I had through being with the men. And so I found it was really, really good for me. Also, I realized that it was so much easier for me to say to my daughters, I love you.
Yeah.
Or my wife or partner, I love you. Mm. But to a man, I love you was not so easy. And that was a pretty big transformation for me, simply to be able to say to my men friends, I really love you.
Yeah.
So I think many men have said, like, they just couldn't believe in 4 days how much care and nurture and actual love they felt without, with no no lack at all of a woman being absent. They just felt so satisfied and loved up in the contact with men.
That's beautiful to hear. I was just remembering, I was first got involved in men's groups in a spiritual community I was a part of for about 14 years. And while there was a lot of, I'd say there was a lot of, character building and positive, positive, strong spine, taking responsibility for yourself kind of development. And we would hold each other to a standard and all of that. You know, to express love in the way you just said was taboo. There was a great deal of love, but it was to actually express that, very directly to each other, it just didn't happen really. And I think in terms of my own process, my own development, and also how the men's collective has developed and how what I'm bringing to that process, especially in recent years, I feel one of the most, probably the most beautiful dimension of it is us as men becoming lovers, true lovers, and really loving each other and being willing to express that, and not only to say it, but also to even express it physically, without any of this sort of going beyond all this kind of homophobia. Can you really be held by a man? Can you even kiss a man, and express that real affection? It's beautiful.
That's right. I mean, I remember many years ago, I used to go every year to Europe, doing things, teaching, etc. And in France, one day at a friend's place, and the two sons came in. I hadn't seen them for some time, and they're both around 14, 16. Uh-huh. They both came up to me and both kissed me, on both cheeks. And I thought, how odd that was compared to New Zealand or Canada, that kind of
or thing England
would be or England, very, very surprising. But what I've got a little couple of lines out of a Hafiz poem that I'd like to read that relates to what you just said.
Sure.
The warrior wisely sits in a circle with other men, gathering the strength to unmask himself, then sits giving like a great illumined planet on the earth. Mm. And I think this point of gathering the strength to unmask is very, very potent. And this is part of the vulnerability, also this recognition that we're all dealing with all of these same instincts. We're all on a parallel path. And I'll follow that up with Lao Tzu.
Yeah, we're not actually so special and unique.
Lao Tzu says, accept being unimportant. Mm. Do not be concerned with loss or gain. Accept disgrace willingly. Mm-hmm. Accept disgrace willingly, eh? Accept misfortune as the human condition. Mm-hmm. Misfortune comes from having a body. Without a body, how could there be misfortune? Surrender yourself humbly, then you can be trusted to care for all things. Love the world as your own self, then you can truly care for all things. Mm-hmm. Now you see, that's the total king energy there.
Yeah.
The accepting unimportant is the, that's the ritual humiliation mm-hmm. of the initiation. Mm-hmm. You're nobody. Mm. You know?
Yeah, it's the humiliation. Humiliation of the illusion of being the hero. The immature grandiosity you were talking about.
A friend was talking recently to me, and he was talking about someone meeting street people and looking into the eyes of this homeless person and realizing this homeless person has realized. Oh. They are totally free. Oh. Totally free. There's nothing they need or want. Oh. But we don't look for a realized being on the streets right. of a homeless person, you know? And so this notion in Christian mysticism and Sufi mysticism, this is all very clear about going beyond the personal self. And that in a way that we're never going to choose to go beyond our personal self. Mm. Because the personal self's got too much investment in being a better personal self.
Being a person, yeah.
Yeah. And so it's going to usually take an event, like a failure or something, some crisis that takes us out of being this, you know, trying to be a better and better personal self.
Yeah.
You know, as Thomas Merton would say, this is a disaster to be a dynamic and successful personal self.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. I think that's the key difference in terms of an authentic spirit, let's say spiritual context and a one of just self-improvement, you know. And
yes. Well, we look at health, right? So either one thing is to be healthier in ourself as a better kind of Peter and Saul, you know, or to actually go further than that, you know, or to even step out of that, you know, and usually it's, you know, it's some experience you have, maybe watching your child being born or, you know, someone close dying or something that gives us this sense of being connected in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah. And also in the Awaken, because our men's collective is an aspect of what we call the Awaken Life Project. So this assertion of our fundamental freedom, free nature, and what we could call prior unity is the foundation. And I've just found that to be very powerful because, you know, everybody's committed to a practice of meditation, for example, you know, not only when we meet, but in our daily life, you know, and we have the certain right life disciplines, you know, so it's not just happening when we're meeting together, you know, there's a whole, lifestyle of purification, you could say, involved. But I think that that ground, you know, every time we come together, we meditate first, you know, in a circle, and it creates a context where, just as you were saying, any challenge, any pattern, any issue that any particular man is dealing with is seen in this context where the personal and what we could call the impersonal literally becomes one and the same. So somebody can be on the hot seat, as we call it, and they're being exposed, they're being challenged, you know, they're going through it, you know, they're feeling the heat, but because and in that sense it's very personal, you know, something's up for that man, but because we're very grounded in and that
impersonal ground of prior unity, there's this tacit recognition. Well, okay, you're on the hot seat right now, but you're not special. There's nothing special about this. You know, we broadly, we're all the same, you know, with obviously key variations. And there is only one man in the room. And you're on the hot seat right now. You're going through some kind of initiatory process. But then through that, you're taking us all further.
Yeah.
And this is one of the beautiful dimensions, I think, of being in a group ongoingly in a brotherhood, where the breakthrough of one man, you know, can catalyze a breakthrough in the whole collective. And maybe other men aren't going to have to go through the same heat or crisis, because that wisdom's transmitted to the whole, you know.
I think that's true. I think that what happens there is there are two things going on. One is listening.
Yeah.
Listening is, it's almost everything to some degree, you know. But the other part is, in Buddha's four foundations of mindfulness, the first one he calls body mindfulness. And that's our sense of our breath, our position in space, you know, like our proprioception, our movement. And then the second one is the mindfulness of the feeling state. And the feeling state is really the notion of duality. Really, it is our interest or aversion. And also there's the neutrality there. And I think what happens in what you've described, when the men are together, what happens is we men drop into the sensory level, where we're actually feeling from our senses. It's not, we're not thinking about it. We're not sort of wondering, what am I feeling? We're actually dropping into the profound feeling sense.
Yeah.
And when we do that, we realize that it is a massive resource that we're not using well enough.
Right. Yeah, that totally resonates with me. That this whole matter of feeling and fully feeling, you know, because obviously as men, one of the big issues is how we tend to be emotionally cut off. And emotionally, or not very in touch with our emotional experience. I mean, I can say, growing up in England, you know, it's like even getting to the point where you can say that you actually feel something, it's the first step. But it's definitely a big part of the process, as you've said, that I feel this a big part of this emergence of an authentic manhood is men who are able to fully feel everything, the whole spectrum, from love on the one hand to, in, you know, being able to inhabit their anger and their pain without dramatizing it, you know, to be able to conduct that energy positively.
This is the development of awareness, which is really the key thing in what you're describing. There's a model that the other part, you know, that you described about men perhaps not having the emotional skills. Another part is really about men being able to dance and really be physically embodied, you know, have a strong physical embodied awareness. And so I have a little model around that, which is the way we initially have this unconscious collapse in the physical body, but also a collapse or a loss, a reduction of our dynamic vitality, but it's not conscious. Mm. So it's a lack of consciousness in our embodiment. Mm. And then as we become more conscious, let's say we're learning a sport or we're dancing, and so then we're in our body more, then we're conscious of this possibility of dynamism, of vitality. Mm-hmm. But we keep sort of flip-flopping back to being unconscious of it and then conscious of it. And then the next part is we start to train. And then we really train in vitality, you know, with, you know, profound awareness. And then from there, we really get into the natural possibility of being in a state of embodied awareness. That's a natural state, you know, that in a sense closer to the child state before we were so culturally conditioned.
And also comes, you could say, in terms of a childlike innocence, you know. I often think of that line from the Bible, what is it, that if you want to enter the kingdom of heaven, you have to become as little children. It's beautiful to see men recovering that wonder, that sense of wonder and innocence, you know, going beyond the sort of rational male mind, you know, that's trying to control and direct that one's existence, and opening up to real wonder and beauty.
I think the way that I understand that is, it's not being into the grandiosity of the child, because the child is full of grandiosity as well, but it's the child and the baby. The baby is, in a sense, initially the baby is the being state, the state that we're longing to experience, or that we experience once in a while on plant medicine or with our lover, is something that, you know, we keep moving towards, but that is where the baby lives, you know. And so I think when Jesus says, lest you be as a child, this is, we return to the being state.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And as when I was saying about this spiritual ground, it's very much about that. It's very much about the assertion that that being state, which is not really a state because it doesn't come and go. We come and go, you know.
It is the field of life.
Yeah. And that is always already the case. And that is always already our true nature. And therefore, the possibility of liberation from any limiting pattern is available in any moment, you know. So there's this dimension of process, you know, of getting to know our patterns, you know, of progressive development. But at the same time, there's this radical immediacy of, you know, this fulfillment, whatever that is, that full liberated natural expression of who we are as human beings, and in this case as men, is accessible in any moment. We don't, you know, and I love that paradox, being very alive, you know, where you've got the path and you've got the goal, and the goal's right here now, you know. And of course, Lao Tzu and the Taoists very much speak to this, you know, as many mystical traditions.
So I was looking, you know, thinking about our conversation, I was looking at, what is it, how do we recognize a mature man?
Yeah.
What is it that we recognize, you know? And some of the things that I came up with were around this capacity of self-regulation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and also the capacity to transform our self-regulation.
Mm-hmm.
Capacity.
Say a bit more about what you mean by self-regulation.
So, for example, just take the notion that we are being breathed by life, right?
Mm-hmm.
We think we're breathing, but actually life breathes us. In terms of breath, when we enter our breathing in a profound way, so we start to control the breath and start to have a relationship with it, then we're actually interacting with life in a way, rather than we're like in a walking coma.
Right.
And so this is why all practices in martial arts, in yoga, in tai chi, in qigong, in energy work, is all related to a deeper experience of the breath.
Yeah.
You know? And I was saying about temperature, this is another area of transformative self-regulation, is what I call it. So for example, we naturally, generally, don't want to be too cold.
Right.
So when the extreme swimmers and people like Wim Hof get in the ice water, it's kind of pretty freaky. and it'll kill us too if we're not training for it, you know. But what he's showing is that, and it has been around for a long time. He hasn't invented this, you know. This is the Tummo. It's very old, this art of a transformative self-regulation of our relationship to hot and cold. And so that is part of a mature kind of relationship to being alive, that you're not just, it's not just a walking coma, but you're actually experimenting with life in a way.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah, tell me more about, well, let's go more into this question of how would one recognize a mature man, an authentic embodiment of manhood.
So one of the things I think is you'll see mentoring. So you see what you're intending here with your work, to talk about how do men get on, how do men know themselves better. That's a side of mentoring and blessing that I think is really important. And that's, you'll see that. You'll see men looking after each other.
Yeah.
You know, with my men friends that come kind of not just out of my men's group, but men friends that I've had for 30, 40 years, we get on the phone just like this. And we do Zoom. Sometimes we're going for 2 hours or 3 hours. We're just talking and talking, and we're free ranging, going from neuroscience to our sadness and our grief, you know. And when, you know, what's happened for me with my relationship with the men I love is that it's such a nourishing place for me to take my pain.
Yeah.
And that's been a real gift in my life, really, just tremendous gift.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I totally resonate with that. It reminds me of something Jed Diamond said to me, because he's been working with men for 43. He's been in a men's group for 43 years. Yeah. And he's been in a marriage for 42, I think. And he said the main reason it's been a successful marriage is because he's been in a men's group for 43 years.
Yeah.
And I think it's very much for the reason that you say, you know, is that a lot of the pain and challenges we experience as men, you know, if we bring that to the men's tent, so to speak, you know, with our brothers, that's a much more healthy way to process and deal with this kind of thing than in our relationships with women. Yeah. And I think that's one aspect of the recovery of this positive polarity that we very much need, is that there's because men just don't. It's amazing to me, every new man who comes to our men's collective, for example, when they get in the circle and they feel the brotherhood, they always say something along similar lines, which is, I've been longing for this and I didn't know it was even existed on, you know, there's something completely new that they didn't know was necessarily possible.
I didn't know I was longing for it.
Yeah. And then they find they were longing for it. And I find all across the board with women, with men who get involved in this work quite sincerely, their relationships with their partners and just women in general start to straighten out, you know.
Absolutely.
Start to clarify, but not because they're working it out with their partner, you know.
No, I think that's absolutely nailed it there. Because when we, with our men friends, when we work through our difficulties and our challenges, we come back to, if we're heterosexual, to a woman partner, we come back cleared out. You know, we've been doing some of our clearing work. And so we're not trying to do that all with the woman. I think that's too much. It is too much. And we're designed for this. I think it's in our system.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. The other thing I was thinking about was this, the capacity for what Moore calls servant leadership. Mm-hmm. You're really seeing yourself as not so much as a leader, but in the that you're part of a servant that is helping with the leadership of the group, in a sense.
Yeah, that's something I'm very passionate about as a kind of leadership model, actually, because obviously I'm the leader and the teacher, but I'm very much, I often say to the guys, look, I don't want a bunch of followers, you know, and any of you can lead this process at any moment, you know, and maybe there's something, even if you're relatively new to this gathering, there's something you can bring, and if, unless you take the responsibility to bring it forward, it'll be missed. I mean, one way to language it is natural hierarchy or a growth hierarchy, where, you know, obviously you would expect men who have more life experience, just in terms of being older, but also if they're involved with this kind of transformational process, you would expect more from them if they've been involved for longer. But it's a context in which every man is being pulled up, you know. And that also breaks down another kind of paradigm that can often happen between men, is the whole projection onto the top dog, you know, or finding some kind of security in being with a strong father figure, you know. And yeah, there's something about that archetype also that I find is very interesting in this work, is because obviously I often get a lot of father projection put onto me as a leader, and a lot often what men are dealing with is you know, authority issues on the one hand, or maybe they had a father who was very weak, you know, they're longing for some kind of positive father force. So it's like I think that's an important part of leadership, and also helps men go beyond this kind of adolescent reactivity where I mean, well, I don't need anybody. I don't need, you know, I don't need to put myself in a situation where I learn from an other. But I find that a very interesting dynamic, where in terms of a positive verticality, authority, surrender, and at the same time, a very inclusive embrace of like, hey guys, come on, we're all on this ship together, you know. And okay, maybe I'm the captain because of how long I've been involved in doing this, but you know, we're all responsible for where we're going.
I think the more that you bring it back into a conscious model, the more that you bring it back into the whole group, the less projections you get. Yeah. Because what will happen is that in the end, at the end of the retreat, they will hardly mention you, because when you're at your most success, they'll keep talking about the experiences they had together and with certain individuals, but it won't all be on you.
That's very true.
And so that's part of your skill in creating the group interaction, which is not focused on you, but is focused on the growth that the whole group is working towards.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah, you really nailed it. You really nailed it, because it's the more and more as we mature as a group, and especially when we do retreats together, we're actually coming up. We're doing a retreat very soon, a 10-day retreat together. It's when this dimension of a collective intelligence starts to take over the process. And even though I'm obviously the guiding force, yeah, there's a whole other dimension at work, you know, that that makes me expendable, perhaps in a positive way, you know. And I remember I recently asked the men, it was about a year ago, and I said, well, what if I died in a car crash, you know, would you carry on?
You know, and they were all like, well, yes, you know. And I was making the point that not only would you want to carry on, but you can carry, you would be able to carry on. So I'm not, it's not all hinging on my input and my presence. And yet at the same time, they also acknowledge that it is me that's driving this process forward. Yeah.
But that's your value in understanding the magician archetype within that, which gives you the skill to manage the nurturing and the blessing and the regeneration, you know, so that you actually keep it, you create a model that is replicable for the men without you.
Yeah.
Archetypal king is always sacrificial.
Yeah. You know?
It can go and be replaced because it's a role.
Yeah.
You know, and you know that we need to recognize that.
Yeah. Wow. Fantastic. Well, I really enjoyed talking with you about this. So.
Yeah. I have one last thing I want to talk about.
Yeah. Go ahead.
And that is, I'd say for in the maturing man, in the man who's coming towards realization, you know, in Zen, they talk about the true man of no rank. I think what happens is the capacity for conscious prayer.
Mm.
So I think that is a key thing. And do you know James Hollis?
I've heard his name.
Yeah, you'd like his work, and he's got lots of talks. He's very good. And I really enjoyed in one of his talks a little while ago, he talked about this mantra he has, and his parents were both really working class, you know, and it was tough. And so his mantra is quite interesting. It's shut up, suit up, and show up. and what he means is, you know, listen, you know, kind of prepare, put on your armor of light, and then show up kind of with your whole self, with your heart.
Yeah.
And I loved, and he says that he's 81, still doing his work, still really working hard. And he uses this, you know, he uses this. And a few years ago, I wrote a song in which in the song, sometimes when I'm writing a song, I record it right away as I'm writing it and listen to it. And then I'm going, oh, and it surprised me because in the second verse, I was whispering the words instead of singing. And it sort of shocked me. And the words were, every day the earth whispers to us, one body, one spirit, one heart. And it kind of, like when I listened to it, it kind of gave me, you know, goose pimples. And and so that has been my kind of prayer since that 4 or 5 years ago, that I can always come back to this, which has, it's like I can see that it's a prayer for my whole life. One body, one spirit, one heart. And I think that that's part of where we're going, as I see it, is basically to learn how to pray.
Yeah.
And I'll finish with one little thing, which I'd never heard before. It reminded me a bit of a different quote. I can't remember who that was by, but this is Kafka. And he says, you do not need to leave your room. Remain sitting at your table and listen. Do not even listen. Simply wait. Be quiet, still, and solitary. The world will freely offer itself to you to be unmasked. It has no choice. It will roll in ecstasy at your feet.
Wow, beautiful.
Isn't that gorgeous?
That is gorgeous. Yeah, and he's a real mystic, Kafka.
My God.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, that's a beautiful summation. Yeah, I really, really appreciate you bringing that at the end of our
talk.
Yeah.
So keep up the good work. I think it's important. I think it's really important you gathering men to consider how we can support each other and do better. You know, it's a very, very important work.
Yeah. And a big part of this whole documentary project is also, we've got a website. We want to connect with other men and other men's groups. You know, there's definitely seems to be more happening than I've ever seen in that this arena. And there's a lot of it'd be great for these different teachers and collectives to share, just as we've been doing, our learnings.
It's true. I think on that note, there are many levels. Like, you know, what I find, there's a limit to the kind of men that will come to my retreats or yours. Mm. And in our society, and like in New Zealand society, a friend of mine who's involved in the men's work and in you know, involved in ritual work with me, he was recently at a walk and a day with a whole group of primarily Māori young men, and it was initiated by a younger man as well. And he was blown away by the extent of the deep contact within one day that happened in this work.
And
I think that, you know, it's like, it's one thing for us as, you know, kind of middle class educated men to have a men's group. It's another thing for the important work within this to get to all the layers of society that we're not actually walking around in.
Exactly.
And that's a big work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's quite something to hold that context. And I don't know how, you know, my sense is just like, we just have to sow the seeds we have, and and then, you know, they'll sprout and find their way into the wider, you know, body of mankind in the way that they're going, you know, they're designed to.
Yeah, well, exactly. It's like in this situation, the young man who was leading this, you know, he was a rapper, and, you know, he's probably a criminal.
Yeah. You
know? and he knew how to reach all of these men.
Yeah.
So that's the key, you know, to reach all the different levels.
Yeah. Amen to that. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Sol. Really great to speak with you.
Okay. Bye now.
Thank you.
So thank you very much for listening. That's it for today. If you would like to find out more about my book, The Fire of the Heart, you can go to thefireoftheheart.com, where you can also download 4 free chapters. If you'd like to find out more about the Awaken Life Project, then go to awakenlifeproject.org or our Awaken Life Project Facebook page, where you can find out all about our ashram, extended spiritual community, retreats and other events, and our adventures living off-grid in the mountains of Portugal. So keep on keeping on until next time, and as they say in Portugal, até já.